Welcome in to 11 Personnel, presented by Monticello Bank. They've been in business for over 125 years, serving the Commonwealth of Kentucky. Been putting people first. It's where people matter. They're going to make sure that numbers are on your side, make sure you have the best rate to finance your future with Monticello Bank. There's a convenient location near you, and you can find more information at NBCBank.com. We're big fans of Monticello Bank and know you will be as well when you check out there and experience their customer service. That's the word I was looking for. Firsthand at Monticello Bank. I'm struggling to find my words this morning, Luckett, because it was a late night waiting on Jackson Robinson. My brain's a little out of it. It's been a weird week, but we're here. We're ready to talk a little football. How you doing, sir?
It was like some Michael Drennan type energy there on the on the basketball side. Remember the Michael Drennan thing? We had to wait, and then we were live and had to wait on his announcement for like 40 minutes.
Yeah, at least like that's the thing about deadlines is you thought he was at least foisted into it, and we knew like, oh, Drennan's having this announcement, and then it drug on and on and on and on, but you knew it was going to happen. Whereas this, I mean. We're recording early today, and I mean, I don't know what's happening. I thought we had to know something, but maybe we just know nothing. Maybe we know nothing. I know that I would have loved to have spent a week in sunny. They went from calling it Destin to Miramar Beach, but it's all the same. It's Panhandle,
yeah,
baby.
If you stay there, you know where that is, right? Destin becomes Miramar Beach at a certain point.
Yeah, like, there's a sign, you know, on the road. Yeah,
if you know where Pompano Joe's is, it's just right past Pompano Joe's is when it becomes Miramar Beach. So if you know Destin, like most of people, as you know, Nick, in the city we live in, do Louisville South, you know the layout of the land there.
Oh, I had a teacher in high school who, you know, he was a younger guy and he loved to bust our chops, and he said, all right, I want everybody to take turns. Tell me what you did this summer, but don't tell me you went to Destin because I know you all already went to Destin. It's like, he got us. Got us there. Mm-hmm. Always a good time. Look at this. I mean, spring meetings used to just be when Daryl Bird talked to Mitch Barnhart for a one-on-one, and that was it. This has been a daily newsy thing, and it didn't produce the news that we thought it was going to produce either. I was surprised by all of the twists and turns that we got from the SEC spring meetings this week.
Well, in a very NFL style, it's becoming an event, like a legit event, like with a good size media presence. You know, Feinbaum's interviewing people. If you're there, it's honestly probably better than media days because it's just smaller, I think, access or smaller pool, so you get better access to some individuals. Or media days gets so crazy, and they talk about issues that are going on, and I think the last 2 years it's been really prominent. Just last year you had to schedule stuff, right? What are we going 8, are we going 9, what's the deal here? And they really had to hash that out. And then this year it's a little more serious just because the House versus NCAA settlement comes into play literally like a week before they all meet here. And so they're discussing that. They're discussing other potential rule changes and all this other stuff. But it's really a lot of this stuff, Nick, I think is some people will consider it boring. And a lot of people aren't really paying attention, I think, to what's going on. But these are like real important issues right now that they're going to have to figure out and they're going to have to discuss. And like, not a lot of people are probably going to be happy with the final result. Like, how are they going to pay money? How are they going to split Title IX? Is it going to be an SEC rule? Like for Kentucky, I've been thinking about this. Like at Alabama, it doesn't matter. Like if it becomes where it's school preference, the football team's getting the money, right? At Georgia, the football team is getting the money. But what happens at Kentucky when you got to share the pie with the men's basketball team that not other teams are sharing the pie with? Like, what does that look like for Kentucky football?
Oh, sorry. I got Robinson's coming to Kentucky. So that's when you know when we are recording, because it got there early. I'm sorry to disrupt you, but I just...
Jeff Borzello breaking the scoop
here. I know. Just very shocking. Yeah, and my head's still spinning from all of it last night. I figured that was what he was doing. He was like, I got to get like a video in order to be able to do this, but there's no video. It's just Borzello, which how much news does Borzello even break? But regardless, no, I hated cutting you off there, but that is important because I love our guy Bagel McCoy on KS Board. His hot take was just give all the money to basketball. The thing is, you don't need to. I mean, the market value isn't there. Yes, the basketball players individually are going to earn more, but you don't need a salary, like a budget. They were saying the estimates were what, 3 to 4 million per team, about 4 million per year for like a high quality program.
Yeah. Yes. But these agents now know what that's at play. Like they know that they have all this money. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? So yeah. They're going to be demanding more. And so what does that mean? I just don't know. And that's something they're just going to have to figure all of that out. But yeah, you're right. Right now, but who's to say that that's going to hold pat?
Yeah. And like, can you, the thing I like for it, for unintended consequences, I didn't anticipate it starting there. I like that basically you can use this money to just fund scholarships for baseball where they have to divvy up all the stupid. That I think that's going to ultimately become a thing. But
well,
you're
can't
right.
have. Yeah, go ahead.
It just comes down to allocation of resources. I mean, how much can you afford to divvy it up? The one thing I will say, just at least on Kentucky's behalf, is that Mitch Barnhart, we know he loves to button his top buttons. He's not great at interviews.
Had the four-button polo rocking on Feinbaum.
Which you rarely see. That's hard to do, man. That's a lot.
It's hard to find, let alone see in the wild.
But he's fiscally responsible, right? Like, that is his, I mean.
He's Budget King. Yeah, that's what I mean. He's Budget
great
King.
He's great at that. So, I do think if there's anybody I trust to be in charge of that, it's him. But you're right. There's going to be some jockeying, and that's where I do think collectives will still have that role of providing ancillary budgets for some of these other guys. You know, we don't know what exactly, but.
And that's also a reason why the collectives are going to still be here, in my opinion. Now, there's some, I think the NCAA wants to maybe like move them in-house, like have the collectives in-house and then have them like go out and do the collectives' jobs now that that's all legal, but. I don't know if that's ever going to shake out because now it's become an industry in the short amount of time. Like, there's a lot at stake for those people, and a lot of SEC schools I think do not want their collectives going anywhere because they have it set up and they know what they're doing and they have smooth, efficient operation between those two parties. So there's a lot to get through. The roster caps were surprisingly, Nick, I think the biggest issue this week.
I was surprised that this, you know, you mentioned the schedule right at the top. I was surprised that they were just like, yeah, we're going to kick the can down the road. I mean, they totally are punting on it for now. I think it makes sense, but this is also the leader of the SEC is the same dumbass who decided to start doing expansion talks before an expanded playoff ever even took place, right? Like they're already bringing up 14 team playoffs before we ever see a 12-team playoff to know if it's good enough or not. So, like, I was shocked that we didn't have any sort of talk other than a report leaked out that a nine-game that ESPN or SEC already went back to the table with ESPN. They keep trying to squeeze more money out of him for the nine games, but ESPN isn't budging whatsoever.
Yes. Yes. As they, you know, they have a lot of money at stake. So both through the SEC and paying for the playoff. So I don't think that's going to happen. Now, like the big question is, what happens when Florida State and Clemson get out of this thing, right? Yeah. When does that happen? Brett McMurphy went on with Feinbaum and said, they're leaving. Like, it's just a matter of time. I don't know if it'll be this year or 3 years or whenever, but they're going to get out of that eventually. And there's not much ACC can do once they pay the fine. At that point, it's going to be all about survival for the ACC. Can they keep their members? But he basically said they're going to the Big Ten when they leave. Basically, the SEC
Big Ten's trying to catch them all, right? They're Ash Ketchum a Pokemon. They're like, we want it to be the Big 20.
the way McMurphy put it is the Big Ten wants to be a national conference. Like, they're just done with that. Like, they're in California now, right?
Yeah.
They're in New Jersey. Oregon.
Yeah, right.
So they're a national conference. So for them, there's real value, I think, in going into the Carolinas and then going into Florida to have a, you know, have someone from there. Where with the SEC, I'm not saying the SEC is a regional conference, but I think they like how they're like the South footprint, how they're the South Southernish footprint, really other than Missouri. And I think if they had to do it again, they probably wouldn't have invited Missouri.
Yeah. Yeah.
Sorry for you Missouri fans listening.
Suck a drink.
But that's why, like, when that opens, he was pretty much like, it's going to be North Carolina and Virginia because they're big on state flagship schools. North Carolina is the obvious one, and Virginia, it's a big market. It's a big school. It's a state flagship school, and and Wayne McMurphy, he also kind of insinuated, like, you can't, you know, there's not always a Texas and Oklahoma out there, so you're going to have to add some other
some type schools brands. We can beat up on. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. So some other brands, some other big brands, but they're different kind of brands. And Virginia, it would be the clubhouse favorite there, and that would really kind of just totally annihilate the ACC, but long story short, to get back into the original point, like, what happens when that happens? Does that open the TV deal at all?
Right.
Does that open up 10-game conference schedule? Like, where does that go? So that's something to watch, but that's down the road a little bit, it seems, whenever that happens. And so it's right now it's figuring out. I think really the whole point of this week was we have a window here in 24 and 25 of 8 games with 16 teams. When in the different setup with the Big Ten being this 18 member entity, and then the Big 12 and the ACC being, for lack of a better term, watered down in a lot of ways. Like, so what does that mean for us with access to the playoff? Like, if our 9-3 teams can get into a 12, they're going to get into a 14. Mm-hmm. There's no real reason to go to 9 games. Yeah. The thing that hurts that is the rivalry aspect. These games you want locked in. And what they've done with this 2-year sample size, pretty much they're playing home and home. They gave you 8 opponents and you're playing a home and home with teams in the conference. Is they've protected all the rivalries they wanted to protect, right? Tennessee, Alabama, like Tennessee, Kentucky have played, 100 years in a row or something. They get to play that. Texas gets to play Texas A&M and Arkansas. And there's all of these type games. Georgia, Auburn, Georgia, Florida, all of these type games. Missouri gets to play Oklahoma again. All these games that they will want to protect and have every year, you can't do that in the 8-game model. It's just not, you just can't do it mathematically. And so are they willing to give that up for is access to the playoff more important? You know, they're going to have to meet there. And that's something I think they're going to figure out next spring meetings. But for now, they're going to see how this year goes. That gives them at least a year of, like, a data point to point to. In this new league, in this new kind of setup for college football. And so you're right, they're kicking that can down the road. And the roster limits, back to that was kind of, to me, the biggest talking point.
Yeah, we want to keep our walk-ons, by God.
We all know the settlement and the money, and, like, we all know, like, the SEC is going to figure that out. Like, each team made, like, $51 million last year, and it's going to be, like, grow about $13 to $15 million more next year when the Walt Disney deal kicks in. So, like, financially, they're gonna figure that out, like, how to pay these athletes. I don't think that's gonna be something that's necessarily gonna be all too difficult, especially if budget wise, if you're in good shape, like, especially like Kentucky should be, where like if they would have fired Calipari, Nick, that could have put them in a more difficult situation. If you're paying a football coach $9 million, and if you're paying two basketball coaches top 10 money, which they would have been doing at the same time for a while, that could have maybe put you in a tougher situation. But that didn't happen, and so they're in a better situation, and I think a good situation financially going into this. But the real thing is just this roster caps, because a big thing of the lawsuit was getting rid of, like, limits. They couldn't, like, have limits of what you could do from a scholarship aspect. Correct. So you can offer as many scholarships as you want. It's just you're going to have caps on how big your team can be. And so where do they end up falling in that cap? And the part of, I think, the issue they're trying to figure out is each player is a certain amount of money that costs money for the university, right? To suit, to feed, to travel, to board, all of that, a scholarship, all of that. And so how many players do these teams need? There's some schools like Nebraska and A&M where Nebraska or walk-ons are like this huge, like it's a huge thing. Yeah. And Nebraska made their, they won national championships in part because their walk-on program was adding 100 players a year. Yeah. So there was kids that could have went and played at Illinois, could have went and played at Iowa State. They would just walk on at Nebraska. And that's how Tom Osborne won all those titles. But that's still a big thing. They bring in a bunch of walk-ons. I think their roster is up to like 140, 150 players in Nebraska. Like, it's a big deal there. A&M, a damn fan came out of the stands in 1922 and made a tackle and started the 12th man tradition.
Yeah.
So the best walk-on essentially gets to wear that number 12 jersey, and it's a big deal. It's like a it's like a really big honor there. So that's, you know, and Mike Elko was outspoken about that. And then I think the other coaches, you know, they talk about walk-ons, but it's really a roster, like, it's really kind of, we have to have a certain number of players to do what we do, right? Like, you could have spring practice without walk-ons. I don't think people realize that. Like,
No.
You could not have spring practice without walk-ons, legitimate spring practice. You just couldn't. I mean, that's – you could not almost have a scout team without walk-ons. And it and you cannot give rest, I think, in practice to players without walk-ons. Like, they are very – they're a very important part of a football program for the value they bring just in the day-to-day operation. Of just having bodies and numbers to do jobs that aren't very fun to do, right? To run a scout team is not something that's very fun to do, but it's very, very important to have.
Not a glamorous lifestyle. And only some of them end up getting that elusive scholarship at the end of the day, too.
To be in the to be running with the twos during spring practice, it's not like a super fun to, when you know, like, once fall camp comes around, you're back with the threes or you're back on the scout team. Like, that's not super fun, but they are very valuable in a certain way. So really, it's like, what number can we be healthy at and can we sustain at is something they're going to have to figure out. And it may be a thing where they have to offer all of those guys scholarships. So that's something tricky. And the NFL plays with 65, and that's, like, I think a big point is, like, why I think that's what university presidents are going to point to. Why are they operating with 65 when we got to have twice that many? But I think the point for the college coaches is, like, I can't go and pick up a tight end when
somebody gets hurt. Yeah.
When my tight end one's got a sprained ankle and my backup tight end blew out his knee last week. Like, I can't just go
sign somebody. Right.
I can't just go pick up a tight end, or I can't, like when the NFL teams have an injury in the playoffs. This happened to the Bengals in the Super when they made the Super Bowl. Larry Ogunjobi blew out his knee, I believe, first playoff game. They had to go on the street and sign some guy. He was with the team for 2 weeks and he almost got a Super Bowl ring. Just being on the team for 2 weeks, but they got to do that. That's not an option in college football. And so they have to kind of find that. And that was, I think, a big concern for the coaches is what they're creatures of habit, right? You're used to having a 120-man team and operating with that. What is it? What if it ends up being a 90-man team? How do they feel about that? And that was a huge, huge, I think, talking point this week. And what does that do? I think, what's the trickle down effect of that? If you go down to 90, does it boost some of the lower power fives? Does it boost some of the G5 programs? Does it make FCS football? Does it increase that depth? Like, there's always unintended consequences for this. So does that help bring some more parity to a sport that has been allergic to parity for a long time, but we're starting to see some more parity come about in the NIL era. So what are the unintended consequences of that? That was, to me, like, the big, big, I think, issue for football this week.
And here's the thing, I'm sure there's some people listening right now who their minds are kind of going, you can go in 100 different directions of all the possibilities and unintended consequences of it all. And that's what makes this all difficult. I'm sure they're throwing a lot against the wall and seeing what sticks. And when you see reporters report about this stuff, they say there's more questions than answers. Because it does feel very much like you get all these people in a room, and instead of having just two or three people make a decision to move forward, they're all adding inputs, and it's creating more conversation, which is what needs to happen right now. But from just an immediate standpoint on what I want to see happen as quickly as possible is I want the injury reports. And
yeah,
we got the quote from Mark Stoops, and people don't realize this because we just don't. We don't ever write about it, but Stoops loves to remind us how transparent he is about injuries. He says it all the time when he's with us. He's like, you know, guys, if somebody's out, I'll tell you he's out. And I just shake my head and say, no, you don't. You never do. Like, you say it. I don't know if he actually believes it or not, but he said it again.
I have a take on this.
He says, I'm pretty forthcoming. If someone's out, I'll say they're out. I'm on board with injury reports. We have so many other big issues. That's a mouse turd right there, which I love. I mean, it's a hilarious quote, but like, you know, I had to like directly be like, Cortland Ford, he's out for spring practice, right? And he's like, yeah, okay, you got me. You know, I've got to say it. You made me say it. He still won't tell us the defensive linemen that were out. I mean, he pretty sure Josiah Hayes is one of them who's out for the year, but like, didn't confirm it or anything like that. I guess we'll have to wait till media days to find out. I don't want to get too heavy handed with Stoops because I was down at the 1-3 Elite Series and I was talking to people who cover Georgia and who used to cover Nick Saban. And like, basically Mark Stoops is the most, I mean, compared to that, like I'm struggling with a good analogy here, but they're basically Putin throwing people in the gulag there when it comes to having access to knowing injuries, to talking to players. I mean, we're going to go to camps next week. You can't do that at Georgia. They even have 7-on-7 tournaments there that you just can't watch. It's like, well,
I didn't know that. Wow.
Yeah, like they don't let them do anything, which camps there matter a lot more too, because those are guys who are really working for offers. That's not as much of a thing at Kentucky as it is at a Georgia or Ohio State. So that's why I don't want to give Stoops too hard of a time. But, like, the Will Levis South Carolina game thing, I mean, come on. That was some gamesmanship like we've never seen before.
Yeah. Here's where I think he's not, like, I wouldn't say he's directly lying in this quote. He tells the UK Sports Network on Saturday the injuries all the time, and they announce it 30 minutes before the game. That happens all the time, Nick.
That's true. Yeah.
So that happens. Okay.
That counts.
So yeah, I think he's counting that. But during the week, there's a lot of we'll see, and there's a lot of like, hey guys, listen, like I know you're getting upset, but like they're not doing it over there, so I'm not going to do it here, right? Like my peers aren't doing it. It's like a competitive balance type thing.
And this would provide it if you had injury reports, because everybody would have to do it. Now, I'm sure they would do some fishy Bill Belichick kind of stuff, or just, you know, Tom Brady's questionable every week. And I don't know how specific they would get. And I'm sure it would be like a Friday. I mean, how nice would it be, though, if every Friday at 3 p.m. we got an SEC injury report and just knew the outs and whatnot.
In the NFL, like they have a system, and it has to come from the team's Twitter. Like the team has to publish it. Yeah. So if you follow your favorite NFL team, you'll see them tweeting out the injury report. Or if you follow their media, you'll see them posted on Wednesday, Thursday. And it goes through like who practiced that day, who didn't practice. There's the designations, right? Out, doubtful, probable, questionable.
Yeah. That's it.
And so what does that mean? To me, like, you're right. I think it's going to be probably a Friday afternoon release from the conference that has who's – like, and it's going to be who's out of that game would be my out and who's out maybe only questionable.
Okay. Like, yeah, basically game time decision. You could do, like, the questionable sort of deal. Yeah.
So that would be how I kind of picture it working. And so it would work out the same for us. From like we get Stoops on Thursday, and like you mentioned, Alabama, they like a lot of them. They only get the coaches, head coaches, twice a week. I think is kind of the deal during the season. And so the coordinators aren't available and players aren't available typically. So our Thursday press conferences here, Nick, would not change. Like he would probably do the same song and dance that they've done for a long time. But on Friday Friday, we would get to the release, and when we record our Pigskin preview, we would have that access to those games. So we would at least know if we needed to make an alteration. I think it's important to understand why Greg Sankey wants to do this. Gambling is out there. It's just here. There is an advantage to be gained if you could get insider injury information. Like, that'd be worth a lot of money, and you could entice people within your, you could with money to pay for that type of information.
Insider trading.
Yeah. But if you're trading. if you're just transparent and just put it out there, then it's not worth anything. Right? Then you don't, then no funny business comes into play in that regard. Mm-hmm. So instead of some characters interacting with people in your organization that you don't want them interacting with, you don't even have to deal with that, that the information is out there, and there it is. And that's why the NFL does it, and I think that's why college football is going to, eventually, I think that's going to come. And SEC is making a push for it. I believe the Big Ten is discussing it as well, so that is going to be here soon, I would imagine. Maybe not this year, but definitely next year in 2025.
And here's the truth of the matter too, like, it is that, I mean, it's easy for the post count, right? For us, when we here's the injury reports, right? Clark Lee, he takes the opposite approach where he just says everybody's injured and then most of them play. But like, so throughout the week, when we're talking about it, when we're discussing it, when we're posting it, it's newsworthy. But how much is it actually impacting the game? I mean, how many of these injuries were there? There's absences where you can feel it on the depth chart. I mean, certainly when the quarterback's out. But I mean, can you even recall, like, what's the most noteworthy opponent absence outside of bowl game withdrawals? We're taking that out of the equation because Clemson didn't have half their defense. But, like, I'm trying to remember a time when a Kentucky opponent was missing somebody and you felt like they got a significant competitive advantage.
Well, this year against Mississippi State, I would say, without Will Rogers and Woody Marks, that offense had no chance.
Okay, there's a good one. I mean, I remember the Alabama ones just because the Christian Story got to start because they were out with their starting.
Well, that was – Jermaine Burton didn't play that game, and he had been – I want to say he'd been sick all week or whatever, and it was just – it was a big surprise, but, like, I think they knew all week that he wasn't going to play.
Remember the time that I said that Louisville players got food poisoning and yes, they might not play, and then they all called me a liar and an idiot, and then they lost by 50 and Kentucky ran for 1,000 yards, and then a few days later they're like, actually, he wasn't a liar, we were sick, it's not our fault that we got our asses kicked by Lynn Bowden. I remember that was fun. My point is I do think in the sport of football, you just deal with injuries. It's much more a part of life. Whereas, like, basketball, like, you know, you get a guy who misses 3 or 4 games, like, that can be significant. And then it takes him a while to get back. I mean, DJ Wagner wasn't the same player for about a month of the season, and you had to do that whole song and dance. We did the PJ Washington foot gate. Like, I've liked it to be a part of it because, A, if it is a quarterback, then we know and we can prepare accordingly and we can handicap accordingly. But B, because I think it's just stupid how much these coaches think it's night and day when I don't really see it as big of a deal if you just put it out all on the table and we can all agree to operate under the same rules instead of doing this stupid song and dance.
I mostly agree. One thing I will say with potential roster limits, injuries become a bigger deal because you're not the depth just sitting there. With roster limits and the transfer portal, some of these bigger programs don't have the depth that they used to have at a lot of spots. And so they're a little bit more vulnerable, I think, to injuries and to taking a step back at certain positions. So from that aspect, I think it does. And then if you have the injury bug bites and you've got 3-4 starters out, then I think it makes, you know, a pretty big impact because then you're playing half the game with your twos, and those twos might not be twos on your team 5 years ago, but they're twos now because of how roster
freshmen
and team building is.
Leave quickly, and if they don't play. So you don't have as many older guys that are there kind of waiting in the wing. You don't always have the luxury of having zero tight ends available for spring practice. That's sort of – but you still have one or two that have played significant snaps, you know?
Right.
So that part is different. I want to get to some more kind of quotes that we got out there. Well, I didn't care at all about the story that they might be putting logos on the field or on jersey patches or whatever.
Kentucky ahead of the curve there, I think.
Yeah. Also, I guess I'm just getting confused with bowl games because I'm used to seeing bowl like logos on fields for bowl games, so it doesn't impact me one way or the other.
I mean, if they took the Alabama logo off and they put Piggly Wiggly on the 50-yard line, that would look weird.
Like, but I think they would just do it on like the 25s though, right?
Where the there was talks about both what that could be worth if they wanted to do it. What they really need to come around to, Nick, is the stadium naming rights. Like, I think a lot of teams are you're just going to have to come around to that.
Yeah. Can you name the name an NFL team without stadium rights on their
Lambeau Field?
Yeah, and your team was the second to last holdout.
Yep, just gave it up. AKA Pay Joe Burrow Stadium instead of Paycor.
What is Paycor?
I think it's like a payroll company.
Why does a payroll company need stadium rights? What average Joe that's going to the stadium isn't going to get? Like, why do they need to know about a payroll? You know what?
I mean, have you ever looked at a stadium and thought, "Oh, what's that? I'm going to look it up." Like, I've never. Like, who is that market to?
I think the
Steelers, or is it just to show your money?
I think my Steelers fans were more likely to buy Heinz ketchup when it was Heinz Field. You know.
Now, yeah, but aren't you already buying Heinz ketchup? Like, what? Who is Heinz ketchup competing against?
I mean, honestly, I'm more pro Kroger because of Kroger Field. I'm going to be more reticent to shop at another grocery store because it's just like, well, I'm a Kroger guy. Drink my Kroger bubbly water. Kroger's they sponsor stuff with KSR.
Yeah,
so maybe slightly.
The thing I don't understand, like, Florida is Ben Hill Griffin Stadium at Florida Field,
but it's the Swamp.
Yeah, but you call it the Swamp. So they could just like sell that to Publix and be Publix Stadium at Florida Field.
And they should.
And they would still call it the Swamp. And that's however much million a year. You're just going to have to be open, I think, to corporate sponsorships more in that regard, especially the stadium. I think that's going to be a big change. And I think it's a lot. Like, people aren't going to like it. Here, people didn't necessarily love that they've called it Kroger Field. And you still see I still call it Commonwealth Stadium shirts in the parking lot every Saturday.
Speaking of Florida, that's one of the big quotes that came out this week where, Scott Strickland, he really knows he's stepped in it and he's trying his best to spin his way out of it. But Scott Strickland, he's the athletic director at Florida, previously worked for Mitch Barnhart. He said, the season is not about our schedule. It's about the Gators. And if the Gators are being the Gators, we're going to be all right. Well, here's the thing, Scott Strickland.
Can say that in May.
What was the quote you used last week? Like, you are a prisoner to your schedule. And
whether good or bad, you're a prisoner to your schedule.
And the Florida schedule is one of the wildest gauntlets I've ever seen. I saw a stat here where their average opponent is a top 20, 25 team and is two touchdowns better than the FBS average.
Yeah.
Opponents are 2.2 points a game more difficult than the number two most difficult schedule. And USC, to catch up with Florida on strength of – so USC is ranked second in this metric. They would have to play every one of their games on the road just to compare to Florida's, where – you've got Miami to open the season. That game's at least at home. UCF is on the schedule. Florida State. All the SEC. I mean, they made some unnecessary steps when making this schedule difficult. And here's the part of this, Luckett. Scott Strickland's the guy in the hot dog costume who wrecked the hot dog car into the play and saying, who's the guy who did this? Because he's the one who made this schedule, right? Like, he couldn't control the SEC opponents, but he's the one who made this schedule and who this is his third head coaching hire, if I'm not mistaken. I know he hired Mullen. He hired Napier.
He did not hire McElwain. He fired McElwain.
Okay.
He inherited McElwain. Fired McElwain. Hired Mullen. Fired Mullen. Hired Napier.
Can a Florida athletic director hire three football coaches in less than 6 years?
Yeah. Yeah, but here's the thing, too. Like, Jeremy Foley hired Will Muschamp, hired Jim McElwain. So it's not like it's just a Scott Strickland problem, right? They're on a run here where it's, is it the AD problem or is it the school's problem, right? Like who's at fault here? But yeah, you're right. Like, they're not going to let him hire another coach.
Right.
It's just what needs to happen for Napier to get another game. That's really the question with Florida. Like, what's the, where do they have to get to for him to just get another year and then maybe hire a new AD? That's kind of where that is. But the thing for Strickland, like, you know, baseball is going well. Todd Golden was a great hire to this point.
Yeah.
They're going to be a preseason top 25 team.
Somebody argue with you about baseball, too, because I feel like they're – I mean, they're, that just fan base isn't a very
– This year was a disappointment, but they're typically at the towards the top. They just were in the national championship not too long ago.
Right, they're a disappointment, and they're like a top 20 program.
Yeah, I think they lost to LSU in the national championship last year. I could be wrong. Someone in the chat could tell me. But it doesn't. Yeah, but football's all that matters, right? I mean, let's just be honest here. Football's all that matters. And like, they've had three losing seasons in a row, and the Vegas win total says a fourth one is on the way.
And you were right. They were runner ups in 2023. So
yeah,
good point.
So what does that look like for them? What happens this year? You look at Florida's schedule, there's 50-50 games littered in the front, and then the back half is just absolutely murderer's row. And so really those 50-50 games early, that I'm talking about even before they get to Kentucky, like Miami at home, A&M at home, at Mississippi State, and then UCF at home. So they get a lot of these games at home. They gotta win most of them, and if they don't, he's in hot water.
You're in a lot of trouble here. Speaking of a lot of trouble, Chris Del Conte, the Texas AD. I don't know much about him, but this dude just isn't afraid to say stuff he's not supposed to say. He was like, "Oh, Red River rivalry. It's no Iron Bowl. It's no cocktail party." And like, while he's right, he just is. He's got just big Texas energy, and I'm just not.
We need characters. The league need more characters. Yeah, he'll be good for that.
Yeah, which I do appreciate. One who I really appreciated was Trev Alberts, because I just talking to people down at the On3 Elite Series, that's a story. Trev Alberts leaving Nebraska to go to A&M.
Yeah. That's a monster story. Yeah.
And it's something I don't think we just can truly grasp well enough, but like, dude, he's Mr. Nebraska. Could have
run a lot
governor in that state.
In a lot of ways, Mark Pope's not a fair... It would be kind of like if Mark Pope left for another job. Or if John Summerall came here, was here for 2 years, was building it up, and then just left for Oklahoma State or something. Like, it's like, what? Yeah, it was very, like, odd that happened. Especially with Nebraska having the Big Ten money that they have, and just the money in general. It was very odd, but it was lack of alignment the rap on that.
It's even... I mean, I really can't. I mean, it's almost like if Reed Shepard had a decent pro career, came back here and was the athletic director, and then left to go to maybe not Tennessee, but like a Mississippi State or something like that.
Illinois.
He's a college football Hall of Famer. His jersey is retired at Nebraska, and then he got to be the AD there, and he finally kind of gets things on the right path. He raised money.
Fired Scott Frost, hired Matt Rule. Yeah.
Raised money to get stadium upgrades there and then leaves as soon as that happens. That part of it's shocking. And then he goes on and he drops this quote. I don't remember if this was on Feinbaum or not, but
with just some reporters in a scrum.
Okay. We've always had enough increasing revenue to overcome dumb expenses. I've said it 100 times, I'll say it again. We don't have a revenue problem in college athletics. We have an expense problem. Trev Alberts is smart. So that's where, like, that's one of the smartest things I've heard in a while, because, like, we know these people were spending like crazy on facilities just so they would look like a nonprofit. But now
we know how much the checks are from Walt Disney.
So now they're cutting. He's saying, well, listen, we got to cut back on the expenses. And he's doing that at A&M. I mean, he's like 30% right off the top just so we can afford to pay these players. And that's the future, is figuring out what the frivolous expenses are and getting them all online. But It is rich coming from the Texas A&M AD, though. I mean, well, no crap. You don't have a revenue problem.
Right. Yeah. And I wrote about this at KSR. I was like, you know, that's easy to say when you're at A&M, right? We know how much money you got over there, buddy. You voluntarily are paying Jimbo Fisher all this money. And I looked it up. I think over the next 6 years, Nick, they have to pay him $7.5 million a year. Like they paid, there was two big payments.
Coach money, and they're paying.
There's two big payments due. Right, it's either 7.5 or 4.5. I had to look at. There's two big payments due, but then there's a large chunk of change that they have to pay every year, annually for I think 7 years up until like 2030, 2031. So man, like Jimbo, like props to you, buddy. But A&M, they're playing in a different ballpark when it comes to financials, but. It was a huge story, and I don't think it really got covered like it probably should have. Mm-hmm. But that was a big deal, him leaving there, because you're talking like it was like a $400 to $500 million stadium expansion they were doing at Nebraska, and Alberts kind of spearheaded that, and he had raised not all of the money, but it raised $100, $150, $200, like enough to start to get it going.
Yeah,
and then the president that hired him left for Ohio State. And then I don't know what happened there, but he just decided, I'm out of here. And so he goes to A&M after Ross Bjork, who's at A&M, gets hired by Ohio State. And it really caught Nebraska folks by surprise, because it wasn't leaked out. It just came out that he was leaving like that day. And then A&M announced it. It was like there was no sniff of it that he was even an option, so that caught a lot of people by surprise, and it was a very strange move there, and it was a huge story over there for Nebraska.
Yeah, and just learning, you know, spent time with Sean Callahan from Huskers Online. I mean, they got a great thing going over there, and I know it doesn't matter as much to maybe SEC football fans, but Nebraska, just the more I learn about them, the more it fascinates me, because the passion of Nebraska fans is, I mean, it's similar to Kentucky. I mean, they had some dude who just like out of his own pocket, like flew a drone around town to make commercials for them. Like, I mean,
I saw that. Yeah.
Yeah. Like that Nebraska, they care deeply, and it's such a weird, we're in such a new ball game. And to have the Alberts thing happen while all of this is going on, you finally feel you've got stability going into a new era. It's crazy. And did you see the picture? Maybe I'll send it to Peek, where it was a picture of all of the UK talking heads at down at they got everybody together, right? All the people who were at I can't figure out Worldwide Todd Harris's Twitter handle, but he quote tweeted it out. And it was just, you saw the entire representation down there, from Kenny Brooks to Mark Stoops, Mark Pope, Mitch Barnhart, Tony Neely, Susan Lax. It was just the who's who of everybody, all the big wigs at UK. It does feel good to just, all right, it's been a little rocky. It's been a little weird. We had the Stoops A&M thing, Cal's leaving, but while all of this big picture stuff is changing like it, and I know it might be end of the road for Stoops in a little bit, it might be the end of the road for Mitch here in a little bit, but we can kind of exhale where college athletics is making the biggest change it will ever change ever. And it's like, he's in a good spot, right? Like, you aren't the guys down the street at U of L who don't know where their conference is probably going to fold. And then what do? You know, like it just, okay. Maybe they're not getting Big Ten money, but you know what? They're getting a great piece of the pie. You're not going to have to worry about it. Obviously, there's plenty of work to be done, but just having some stability as we sit here in the summer of 2024, it feels good. Feels good, Mr. Luckett.
Yeah, I mean, just having your basketball and football coach on the same page is a good thing, not a bad thing.
Right, right.
And so, yeah, but everything is fluid, like, I would say, you know, but right now they are in a good spot. And I think financially, this is where, you know, Mitch Barnhart gets a lot of criticism, and a lot of it's deserved. But from a fiscal budget angle, like that Kentucky will be in they're going to be in a good spot when it comes to need spending money. My big question is just, what is the oversight, and what's the structure? mm-hmm. of how you dispense this revenue. And I think that's something, or the revenue sharing. And I think that's something they're trying to figure out right now. And I'm a little concerned that Greg Sankey, that they're still asking Congress for help. Because yeah. that was another thing. It was basically, to put it shortly, they don't want the students becoming employees. And so they don't want more lawsuits. This settlement helps with the lawsuits, but it doesn't put it there right away.
Stops the bleeding.
They want guardrails so they can enforce certain type of rules for that, like a special bill that says you can't sue them for whatever, like, to my mm-hmm. understanding. And I don't know if that's ever going to come. And basically the talk was, you know, it's an election year, so we can't really do anything right now. And we got to wait and see who gets elected. Ross Dellinger went on with Feinbaum and was pretty much like, you know, they're working with Ted Cruz kind of closely, and Cory Booker's a Democrat working with Cruz. So they kind of got both sides here, and they're trying to get a bill together. But, you know, Republicans and Democrats don't really see on the same side on some issues. And it's so where the Senate go, he said, where the Senate House and where it falls, whether Republican or Democrat, could make a big impact on getting to the NCAA what they want. And that just sounds like such a cesspool. Like, that's not how you should be operating, but that's where they are right now. And they keep digging their heels in the sand on not wanting to have students be employees. And so we'll see if that works or not. I have my doubts. And so that's still a big issue that really didn't get talked about this week. But to me, that was kind of the biggest story. And that was kind of day one when Sankey talked before all the meetings started, was that, you know, we still need help from Congress. And it's like, uh-oh, that doesn't sound great. And then, well, it's election year, so we can't get help right now, but we're going to keep coming back. It's like, oh,
it's good luck with that. Too, I mean, they're asking Ted Cruz for help. Is there any more unpopular politician in Washington, D.C. than Ted Cruz? I don't know politics. I know nobody likes that guy. But, like, I know that. So,
I try to stay out of that lane as much as possible. What I do have a feeling on is that you shouldn't be, like, they've wasted way too much time up there in D.C. doing whatever they're doing. Now, I think part of the reason they hired Charlie Baker to be the NCAA, whatever they call it, the commissioner or whatever, was because of the relationships he had on Capitol Hill. Because he was the Massachusetts governor or senator, one of the two?
Right, something like that.
So I think that's the thought, that he could help get that done. But I just, you know, they got other issues up there in Congress that they're trying to figure out.
No kidding.
They're not super worried about this $1 million college athlete industry that was basically free labor, that they're having problems enforcing rules. So I do worry about that. So we'll see where that goes. But that's something to monitor too. Here's after the election. So that's going to be, I think, after the football season's over. Like, we're going to learn more about that probably in January, February, if they're going to get help there from the NCAA, or if they're going to have to deal with potentially more lawsuits.
Speaking of looking forward this weekend, we're going to be looking ahead to Kentucky football camp. We'll be there Sunday afternoon with maybe some updates, hopefully before the Batcats are playing in a regional final at KPP, the first championship game, potentially. You know, it's double elimination, so, you know, it could go to Monday. But you could have the Batcats clinch a super on Sunday night. Sunday afternoon, Kentucky's hosting its first camp. There's a lot of official visit weekends out there, Luckett. Cats aren't going to compete with them. Sunday will be the day that you get your first round of campers in. We'll be there, and if you want all the intel from the camp, you can find it on KS Board. Promo UK1 will get you 2 months for only $1. All the access you need over at KSR Plus. A lot of stuff happening right now. Right over there, I was sharing a lot of intel from the On 3 Elite series. That was a ton of fun this weekend, getting to kind of yuck it up with all the other folks in the network, to talk to some of the top 50 recruits in the country. So the spring meetings, they provided a nice little trampoline to get us into recruiting season, because that's about to get hot and heavy. I'm sure, like, we know some of the official visits that are happening. There's going to be some surprise ones in the middle
always
of the
is.
Week.
Yep.
And then there's going to be schedules that change. Taron Hedrick, the IOL, he just moved his one up. So there's going to be a lot of stuff happening, and make sure you're on KS Board to keep up with it all.
Yeah, just put in a. It's also RPM season, so you're going to see a lot of picks be going in. I just put one in for Montavian Quisenberry to land at Kentucky. I think it's been trending that way since Cam Miller committed to Wisconsin. You look at their board, there's not really another slot receiver out there. I just think that, and you look at how important that Boyle County relationship is for the Kentucky football coaching staff. Mm-hmm. I think if they're hosting him on an official visit, I don't think they're going to be jerking his chain very much. So I think it could be similar to how the Tommy Zeismer recruitment worked out, Nick, where it was kind of iffy if he was a take or not, or if he had a committable offer. He got it on his visit, and then I think he committed on his visit. And I wouldn't be surprised if something similar happens with Quisenberry.
And I believe Zeismer also camped, and then that's when it was like, all right, you're a take sort of deal. I have a feeling that's going to be similar to Quisenberry, where they're going to get him up here, test him, make sure that it's like, all right, this is a little confirmation bias.
And then Jaden Clark's another one that they're doing the same thing, I think. He's supposed to visit on the 14th, and he's camping on the 10th at Kentucky. So that's very much, if the camp goes well, he's probably going to commit soon after his OV. He's an offensive lineman up at he's camping at Ohio State. Brody Lennon is also camping at Ohio State, same day as Jaden Clark. And you would know all of this already if you're at KSR Plus, because this was all in our recruiting notebook yesterday. He's visiting Missouri this weekend, camping at Ohio State next week. So you got to watch Ohio State there. But if he gets out of that without getting an offer from Ohio State, I think he's Kentucky's to lose as of this point. And so that's an important one to watch. He's their top tight end target out of Cleveland.
Should be a lot of fun. Hopefully the Batcats get it done this week and give us a little baseball to stay locked in for a little bit longer through the summer. Appreciate everybody following along today. Appreciate Monticello Bank. Great presenting sponsors here at 11 Personnel. Thanks so much for watching. Thanks so much for listening and walking in to 11 Personnel. For Adam Luck, and I'm Nick Roush. Go Cats and go Kroger.